Welcome to Shaken and Disturbed, everybody. I am Darren Karp here with a grief.
I don't love my hair.
It's too perfect for me today.
I know.
But it Hi, almost everyone. Looks, you look like Syl in The Sopranos, where it's just like perfectly coiffed. You look up Syl, S-I-L.
What kind of a name is Syl?
It's Silvio, short for Silvio, but no one calls him Silvio. Oh. It's Syl. It's Stephen Van Zandt from the E Street Band. But
okay,
it's just, his
I
hair
see
is like too perfect.
And it does look like that. Today. And
you're John Thrasher, by the way, everyone.
I am John Thrasher. Hi, everybody.
Yeah,
if you're watching on Patreon or YouTube, it's not shaping the way that I want to, but it is.
If this was
the shape that I liked, it would be perfect, but I don't know.
I feel like
I need a haircut every like 5 days. Is that normal? I don't know that that's normal. I should be thankful, right?
They just notice it so much more because your hair grows half an inch a month. And I think for men, half an inch a month is quite a bit.
I
wouldn't notice it.
I was just talking to someone recently about how I should just be thankful I have hair, because a lot of guys my age, Darren's face says it all, for those of you watching, are not typically doing so great in the hair department. Oh my God, this face.
That's the face.
Okay, if you're listening to our podcast and the audio, fly over to YouTube right now.
Yeah. Fly over. Hit that smash subscribe button and check out.
Oh my God.
That face.
By the way, I should use that in the screenshot, right?
No, that's what
thumbnail.
I'm saying. That's the thumbnail.
That's what you were saying. Okay.
But welcome to Shaken and Disturbed to everybody.
Hi, everyone.
We are here. We are ready to get going with our
case.
We're
queer. You know,
it's the end of Pride. I think we got about one more week left. So, John, you're going to have to change that watch band.
I turn straight at the stroke of midnight.
Because July 1, if you're wearing rainbow anything, you know what happens. I don't want to say it, but
it's true. No, it's true. You're funny today. All right, let's get into. I mean, you're always funny, but you're cracking me up.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, good.
You're like,
all right,
okay.
Let's get into this week's case.
Wait, before we go on, I just
want
to say I forgot to mention that I was going to text you yesterday, and let's just get this out of the way. I have a bag of shrimp in my freezer that's been in there for 2 years. Do you think that it's okay to eat that?
In the freezer?
Yeah.
I would think so.
Google and ChatGPT said that it would probably still be edible, but the texture and flavor would have gone away. And I'm like, I don't want to like cook old shrimp and it like dissolves in a pan. You know what I mean?
I mean, wouldn't you kind of, I mean, the thing is though, let me just say this up top, because like Nadine's like, the expiration date was a day ago. It's done. And I'm like, no, it's usually like Best Buy. That's the peak of when it's best. But then it comes down. Like, that's just how. Oh, according to the USDA, frozen shellfish like shrimp is safe to eat indefinitely, but its flavor and texture might decline over time.
Okay, that's what ChatGPT said. In fact, ChatGPT probably went right to that account.
But I will say, I think we waste a lot of food in this country, like specifically in America, because we have food abundance, which is a sign of a healthy country. It's obviously a sign of wealth. This is all good stuff. I'm not saying that we should eat every last bit of a chicken bone, but I do think in general, those dates of those things, like so much you can tell by just like the look and smell of something, you know?
Okay.
Like,
so because you brought this up.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say before the USDA or FDA or any of these things, like created those expiration dates and those things, like, how the fuck do you think people like knew if they could eat meat that they cooked on a fucking rock outside, you know, in dirt? So I'm just saying, I think people need to loosen up a little bit with their ideas of.
You're like, go outside and eat the grass, everybody.
Well, I do think to some extent we'll probably know. And granted, no one wants food poisoning. I'm not saying eat mayo that's been out, you know, in the sun for days.
That's what I was gonna say. Today, literally this morning, I made a sandwich for work. Put mayonnaise on it. I mean, you know, for lunch or whatever to take to work. And I was about to walk out the door and I was like, wait a minute. I think I've had that mayonnaise in there for too long. I go back to my refrigerator and the mayonnaise says Best Buy,
right,
not
which
expires
is at its,
by.
Best Buy is just at its peak of really goodness. It's like, that's when its taste is the best. So even if you hit it a week later, it's still good. It just might not be at its peak.
It was It was a month. But to your point,
that's not that bad.
But to your point, I smelled
it. I thought
it.
You were going to be like 3 years.
I smell. Oh my God, no. I smelled it and took a little bit of a taste. And I was like, this completely smells and tastes completely normal. TBD, I had lunch today. No problem so far. But anyway, this is so ridiculous. But my point is, I always come to my parents for this stuff, like my father. And Darren, it was just recently Father's Day. Yes. We'll get to some thoughts about that in NMR. But in case you want to say thank, or I mean, I'm sorry for in our listener shout outs.
Father's Day in NMR. So cool.
Oh, we'll get to it today. Yeah, but do you want to say anything to the listeners who may have?
Well, I thank everyone who wished me a happy Father's Day. I thank everyone who wished Nadine a happy stepfather's day and a happy step birthday. John said nothing. So that's all
I said. Nothing. It's true. Excuse me. I posted in our Facebook group. I was the only one, the first one that did. Thank you.
I think I blocked you.
Oh, yeah. You blocked me. Yeah. Anyway, let's get into this week's episode before people start unsubscribing. Okay. Here we go.
In the fall of 1991, 14-year-old Katarisa started the eighth grade. And her last year as a middle schooler, where she excelled in math and dreamed of one day becoming an accountant, which is kind of cool. A, I like that a woman wants to become an accountant, and B, that you know at that young of an age that, like, accountant, you know, like, I feel like when you're in middle school, you're still like doctor, lawyer, astronaut type of thing, you know, like you're in.
What did you want to be at 14?
Game show host. I've always wanted to be.
Even at 14?
I knew at 7.
How can we make this happen? I mean, you know, I want to make this happen for you. Well, are you developing something?
I am developing. I've been developing. I am trying.
Okay.
We'll see. Hopefully the next.
Can I help you develop?
Really
I want to do something. Yeah. Let me say this too. I'm not just saying this to like toot my own horn here, but when you develop something like this, I really think that you should come to me, because I think I know you so well, and so do so many other people, but like, do you have people, anyone else in your life that you have a closer work relationship with than me and like Andy, of course, like in terms of like duration of time and weekly? I was thinking this about you. I was like, oh my God, I'm always like using you as a reference for things, you know, because you are not only a friend, but you've seen me working every single week for like 8 years now.
Yeah, truly anyone. It would 10 years. Be like Watch What Happens Live or Andy people, but really outside of Andy, it would be just you, I think.
Yeah.
So yes, I will.
I'm just saying, keep me posted, because I love, by the way, and I will say this as well, when I was working at Space Station and I was the lead producer on your two podcasts, I felt like I knew exactly what type of cases you would love. Like, I just feel like I'm right there, like, lifting you up. Yeah, I know you. We're the Pat and Vanna of true crime podcasting. By the way, Pat,
you tear me down. Yeah.
And I do tear you down. Pat, thank you for your time. I know.
You almost said thank you for your service, which would also
I did too. I know. By the way, Wheel of Fortune had such a huge impact on my life. It's like crazy to think that he's not hosting it.
I mean, it taught people English. It actually taught a lot of people how to read in English and think about things and like that. So, you know, I mean, game shows are good like that. You know, I think. Anyway,
we're digressing, but keep going.
So Katarisa wanted to become an accountant, and she was a bubbly fashionista who loved shopping for all the latest trends. And by the time November rolled around, she was already shopping for her graduation outfit, excited about getting to dress up and maybe even ride in a limousine with her friends. I miss this time.
I know. And I just want to say, and when I was in eighth grade, if you were one of the top five, what are they called? Fundraiser sellers of this fundraiser that we did. Yeah. If you were in the top five, you got to go in a limousine with a chaperone, with a teacher, and you got to go to McDonald's.
With a chaperone, not Chapel Roan. Just make
not
sure.
Chapel Roan, who I also love and we talked about.
And you
about
got
it
to go to McDonald's. Did I just hear that?
And you
correctly?
Could go to McDonald's and you could get 10-piece nugget and sweet and sour sauce. And it was like the thrill. Like, I had never even thought of a limousine. I was like, what's a limousine? What?
That's so fancy. Yeah.
And I was like, I think probably the top one, because I was determined to be able to go in this limousine. And I'll never forget it. And I was in like, I was probably in like sixth grade, actually, because I remember being like super young. But yeah, limousines, like just like Katarisa, like it was just so exciting for me.
I took a limousine maybe a year ago in the city. I was out with my girlfriends. I won't say who.
Okay.
And I was out with my girlfriends and we were all like drunk, you know, maybe a little like stoned here and there. And so, you know how in New York City you can get one of those like black cars with all the lights in it, and you get them till you get them, you're like $50, it'll take you
Oh no,
downtown
I
or
didn't even know
whatever.
that, but
Oh
that's
yeah, they're
okay.
like, so my friend, like $50, she's like, drive us to Cubby Hole, which is like a gay bar. And it was probably, we were probably like in the 30s, right? So going down to Cubby Hole was like 10 minutes, right? So we're like in the back of this
Do I
Cubby
know
car,
this
it's all lit
person?
up. No, I don't think you've ever met her. And it's all lit up, and we're in the back, and we're like smoking, having a good time. And like the ride is literally like 8 minutes. And my friend who called the car, she's like, what? I paid him $50. She gets out, she starts screaming at the driver. She's like, excuse me, I paid you $50 to get us here. And he's like, ma'am, we are here. And
She's like, oh.
she was so out of it that she had like yelled at this driver who did
She
exactly
thought
what
it was
she
going to
paid
be
him to
like a
do.
longer ride or
Right. She's like,
something.
what the fuck? So
Oh my
it was so funny, makes me
God.
laugh. Anyway,
That's
so
good. I love
we
it.
I sincerely apologize to this man, by the way. I
Yeah, I
was
was
like,
going to
I'm so
say,
sorry. Like, this is absurd. Anyway, so Cotteresa lived in Harvey, Illinois with her parents, but often visited her grandmother in the nearby town of Dixmoor after school before taking a bus home later in the evening.
I'm sorry, Dixmoor?
Not
Okay.
somewhere I'm living.
I might want to check out this little town.
Yeah, so exactly. Well, maybe it's not so
Well,
little. Well, thank you. On Tuesday, November 19, 1991, Gotteresa left her grandmother's house in Dixmoor, but unfortunately, she didn't arrive home. And though her family and the authorities looked for her, she wasn't found until December 8th, which is like 3 weeks later, when police received a call about a body by the side of Interstate 57. Now, the body did, in fact, belong to Cotteresa, who had been killed by gunshot wounds to her head, which feels very violent for a young girl who probably
At
didn't
that
have
age,
a huge defense system to her. Like, why? Like, you know, a lot of times we hear about strangulation and, you know, stuff like that. Maybe obviously beaten to death in some sort of way, but gunshot wounds just feel super like this. She's a young girl. I'm not really sure how much defense she could have had. And that feels like it would have been for a bigger force. Now, authorities did discover her body, unfortunately, undressed from the chest down, and were able to positively determine that she had been sexually assaulted at the time of her attack, of course. And at the scene, detectives performed a genital swab, which came back positive for semen. So we do know that she was raped.
I
However,
hate
it would be
this.
10 months, almost a full year, before detectives were able to make any significant break in the case when they received a tip from a boy about Cotteresa's age.
Yeah, and so according to this 15-year-old boy, another boy who lived in the neighborhood, 14-year-old Jonathan Barr at the time, had watched Cateresa get into a car with a group of other teenagers on the afternoon that she vanished. And if the tip turned out to be true, this would have been the last known sighting of Cateresa while she was still alive. The boys, yeah,
Sorry
go
to
ahead.
interrupt. I just like it took 10 months for sort of this tip, let's say, we're not even gonna say evidence, to come to light. A, I really wonder what went down in those 10 months. Like, is it, do people come forward
Are they,
because they realize that they're like, oh shit, that would have been part of the case? Or is it like you're trying to fight not being part of something and you're feeling really guilty and your guilty conscience is getting on you? That's really like the interesting psychological time period that I'm actually super fascinated by, is to sort of like what makes people come forward after a certain, I get it immediately, but 10 months?
And
I mean,
especially young kids, because you have to think that these parents have a lot to do with whether or not they come forward with
and they,
tips.
you'd think, you know, maybe the parents had said something on the side about something, and then the parents were like, wait, what did you say? You know, like,
Yeah, totally.
what is that a tip to something? So just really interesting to me.
I agree. And these boys who were last seen with Cateresa were Robert Veal and Robert Taylor, both 14, and Shane Sharp and James Harden, both 17. So again, like I said, all minors under the age of 18,
Right.
something to think about as we proceed here. So on October 29th, 1992, Robert Veal was brought into the police station for questioning without his parents or an attorney present, which is
This
probably not a good
seems
idea.
wrong. Okay.
He was kept at the station for more than 5 hours. Eventually, the boy crafted and signed a handwritten statement saying that he, Robert Taylor, Shane James, and Jonathan Barr, the secondhand eyewitness, were all involved in Catarace's rape and murder.
Jesus.
And I'm already thinking of what's his name from How to Make a Murder or whatever that
Brandon Dassey.
Brandon Dassey, but thank you.
I'm thinking to myself, great that they get a confession, but B, this is not going to be able to hold up in court without or parent present because these kids are fucking children. So this doesn't feel justice-y to me.
I agree. Police then brought the other 14-year-old Robert Taylor in for questioning on the same day. The boy was kept in custody for over 21 hours without parental or legal assistance and, as you might expect, ultimately signed a statement implicating himself and the other four teens in the crime. Yeah. Shane Sharp was also brought in for questioning, which resulted in another signed confession. Though each of the three boys were ready to confess their guilt by the end of their time with police, each of their statements were different in ways that blatantly contradicted the other two. And this is when you know it's a coerced confession, when all of them are just completely different. So, however, well, or at least that's what I would assume. However, the confession statements in hand, with confession statements in hand, all five boys were arrested and held in custody as they awaited trial. So it's a really uncomfortable, unrealistic situation, frankly. Again, I do want to mention it is the 90s, which just gets further and further away mentally in my own head, but like, you know, that was like 30 some years ago at this point, and it just was a different time when it came to the criminal justice system. It just was. I mean, of course, every decade has its own, even just like media cases that kind of define a generation, so to speak, but you know, this is pre is it pre-OJ? Yeah, I think pre-OJ. I don't know. It's just be right mindful. At the time of
but if you get a confession from a 14-year-old or 16-year-old or whatever, a minor, how often, you know, how soon are the parents contacted? Like, do the parents not know
totally
custody? Like, that's kind of what
good question. Yeah, it's a good question.
Where do they think these kids are?
Yeah, and like, did they drive them to the police station and then leave because they're in custody now? That's shocking and horrifying in and of itself. Well, nonetheless, by the way, guys, we just want to mention, we want to take a second and say thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers who commented on our most recent post asking for case suggestions. There are lots of good ones. Darren and I were just talking about it before the show started. We have a full document that we're going to email to Megan right after the show.
Yeah, we sent it straight over to Megan to look into. Yeah. And of course, just a reminder that Radish and Sussy Radishes on Patreon, you get first dibs on your case suggestions.
Yeah. And if you want to join in on the fun with our community of radishes over there, you can join today for as little as $5 a month. You can actually get it cheaper if you sign up annually. So it's extremely cheap.
Come join our garden.
There you go.
That's our new statement. Come join our garden. You can join us at patreon.com/shakenanddisturbed, where obviously we make it super easy for you and you can just click the link right in our show notes.
Lovely.
Well, in June of 1994, a couple years later now, the trial had still not commenced and the young men were still in jail.
Wow.
It was around this time that the state crime lab finally processed the swabs taken from Catarace on the day her body was discovered. It's just crazy that it would take this long.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand it.
Remember that book I was telling you about last week, What the Dead Know by Barbara Butcher, who was a medical examiner for New York City, like an investigator? Holy fuck, I finished the book. It was awesome. But she talked about sort of at the end of this book, she talked about certain cases that kind of stuck with her and just like the sloppiness under which sometimes the evidence can be handled by these, for lack of a better word, really shitty forensics teams. You know, obviously not everyone, but basically talked about how this one woman just like was so careless, didn't think her work was bad, contaminated samples, cross-sampled them. So not only do you have to now like let potentially guilty people go free, you also potentially put innocent people in jail.
Right.
And it's just like shitty all around. And forensics teams, like these are the things that solve cases. So it just seems like something that they really need to be better with in some sort of way that they can streamline this process.
And I feel like, I don't know exactly what time frame you're referencing here, but I do feel like the 90s was like sloppy. And then
this
like
was
the 2000s.
In like the 90s. Yeah.
That
this
makes
was
sense.
Like, this was in the 90s. It might have even been in the early 2000s because she also talked about what happened after September 11th and just the crime scene, obviously, of all of that. So this was not far. This was in the 10-year range of this. But in New York City specifically. But anyway.
Right.
So they finally process the swabs that were taken from Cauteresa on the day her body was discovered. Now, though all five boys were implicated in her sexual assault, only a single unidentified male DNA sample was found on the swabs. The DNA collected did not match any of the defendants, which is...
So how the fuck have they been in jail for 2 years?
Unless they're responsible for her demise and something for some reason else, she had sex with a person voluntarily, maybe beforehand. Right. Or
good point.
I think it would be pretty rare for her to be raped by somebody, let go, and then killed by these five boys.
Five but other I'm just saying, guys, like, yeah.
In theory, I guess it's possible. Now, in spite of this, the DA chose to continue prosecuting based on the signed confessions, even moving to prosecute Jonathan Barr and Robert Taylor in adult court, which, as we know, they're younger than 18.
Yeah.
And there's no evidence outside of these written confessions by children tying them to the case. Now, the motion was initially denied. The judge presiding over the case was extremely suspicious of the three confession statements that differed wildly on important details about the crime. If you're going to confess, have the details be the same.
Well, if it's a real confession, right?
Well, that's... That's
we'll have to see. Yeah.
Yes. Now, but the DA appealed the decision from this judge on the grounds that the judge had abused his discretion with the initial denial. I don't know how you can abuse that.
Yeah.
Discretion.
How does that work? You're a judge.
Well, yeah. Or abuse the discretion in terms of like, there's just, this should not be brought to court because we're going to put the wrong people in jail, or they can appeal and then it will get written up and then it'll be 20 years before we actually solve this case.
Right.
But before trial began,
I've been saying Shane. I think it might be Cheyenne, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah,
Cheyenne or Shane
and Robert Veal made deals with the DA. Each pled guilty to first-degree murder and were sentenced to 20 years in prison. The possibility of parole after 7. And in theory, especially when you're young, possibility of parole after 7, if you're on best behavior, you can still live your life.
Yeah.
You can still have a life.
To some degree, right.
In exchange, both young men had to testify against the other three defendants. Now, that's pretty big. James and Robert Taylor were tried together and found guilty of murder in the first degree. Both were sentenced to 80 years in prison. Jonathan Barr, one of the initial eyewitnesses, was tried on his own. He was convicted, and he was sentenced to 85 years in prison. This is the rest of these people's lives. All three young men appealed their convictions and made requests for additional DNA testing on the evidence collected at the crime scene. Each request was denied, and all five men, really boys, remained in prison. It is crazy that to make for additional requests of DNA testing, I don't really understand this, why it's denied. I understand that there's like backlogs of things. But if it's true, then the evidence will hold up in court. What is the problem of retesting something like that?
Right.
You know, like, I don't really understand, outside of the fact that it obviously costs time and money and energy, but for a court case like this, especially when the DNA didn't match her. So how could you tie them to a rape or something like that? Why wouldn't you test it again?
It sounds like there's some sort of ineffective assistance of counsel here, because it's just common sense. I mean, you know, we're not lawyers, but I think after almost 1,000 episodes of this stuff, we kind of have our own thoughts about it. But yeah, it is rather shocking. Well, in 2009... the legal team representing James and Robert Taylor repetitioned for additional DNA testing. This time a new judge agreed and allowed the evidence to be resent to a lab.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Again, this is though 20 years later. I mean, 10 years later,
it's
whatever
crazy.
This is. Like, it's nuts.
Yeah. It took over a year to even locate the evidence, which was not found until the judge granted a new order to allow the defense team to search the state's logbooks and scour the evidence storage area themselves. This is crazy. And I just said the 90s were sloppy, and look at this, 2009, 2010.
Right.
In 2010, two of the defendants who initially gave handwritten statements to the police, Shane Sharp and Robert Veal, both recanted the testimony they had given at trial, stating their stories were fake. The new DNA testing was concluded in March of 2011. Conducted in March of 2011. Thank you, Darren. And this time there was a match in the database. I'm assuming this is probably CODIS that we're talking about here.
Right.
The DNA belonged to a man named Willie, excuse me, the DNA belonged to a man named Willie Randolph, not any of the five men in prison. At the time of,
by the way, doesn't Willie Randolph like sound like an old man's name?
It does, yeah.
Like Willie Randolph is like not 14. He's not 16. Like Willie Randolph is an older man.
Well, he is, because by the way, at the time of Catarace's murder, Willie, who is now 58, was 33 years old. You were right, Darren, and living in Dixmoor on parole after serving a 20-year prison sentence for armed robbery. On November 22nd, 1991, 3 days after Cataresa first vanished, police had received a call alerting them to the presence of a dead body near a pizza parlor close to the spot where her body was eventually found. Although cops responded to the call, they were unable to locate a body. Authorities now believe that Willie was... Go ahead.
How is that possible, though? Like, you get a call alerting them the presence of a dead body near a pizza parlor, and then
the only thing I can
find
think
the body?
Well, the only thing... Now, listen, authorities believe that it might have been Willie that was that anonymous caller, so maybe he's throwing them off the scent, or maybe he even moved the body.
Yeah.
A lot of different scenarios could really have happened here. But on November 3rd, 2011, the DA's office finally dismissed all charges against the five men. Jonathan James and Robert Taylor were released from prison on the same day. The three men were compensated $208,800 each for their time that they spent in prison, which, by the way, I think changes on a state-by-state basis. I believe Maryland, you get $1 million for every year served. So there's that. By this time, Shane and Robert Veal had already been released from prison after completing their sentences, but their charges were vacated on January of 2012.
So I wonder what the deal is with the false confessions. And also, I feel weird sometimes about, like, I'm not saying that these people shouldn't be compensated, but the way we compensate these people is through taxpayer money. So the people who make mistakes are just using money that isn't theirs. They're using our hard-earned money to pay for their mistakes. And that is not going to incentivize anyone to try and get it right the next time. If their pay was docked.
Right. No, that's what it should be. I mean,
you know, if their pensions were docked, then I think you'd have some incentive to get it right. But because it's just taxpayer money, it's free money.
This is the thing that I remember when we were starting Martinis and Murder, and we would hear about these, we would do these cases from time to time. And I kept like, I remember waiting to learn the truth about this. Like, I'm like, there's no way, like, these people just keep getting away with it. These police and investigators, like, there's no way that, like, you know, the money, you know, the incentives aren't there to do the job correctly. And it's like, here we are years later, and it's like exactly how you just described it. And it's really disturbing, actually. It's a weird, it's a weird flaw in the system, if you ask me.
I just don't think that the taxpayer, I think those people should be compensated, but I don't think the taxpayer should be punished for other people's mistakes. I don't think that incentivizes anything.
Yeah.
Well, one of the prosecutors who worked the Dixmoor 5 case issued an apology to the men who were wrongfully arrested, as well as their families. She offered up her regret that the system didn't protect them, instead victimizing them, quote, in a way that could never possibly be repaid, end quote. Mm. The five men sued the police department, claiming that authorities had coerced an initial confession statement from Robert Veal, who was learning disabled and underage at the time of his arrest. That's fucking appalling. Brandon Dassey, as you
know. Yeah, I was just going to jump in here. I think the key here, aside from, of course, the being learning disabled and that being a big part of it, but the underage part we shouldn't skip over, because, I mean, think about being 14, 15, 16, and you're in a, what, interrogation room, and you're basically being told, if you don't confess to this, you're going to still go to jail. Like, I'm sure I think was very straight-laced and followed the rules, if I were ever in that situation, I probably would have been scared out of my mind and just done whatever it took to make the police or the interrogators happy, because, you know, it's a tactic. It's a way to get what you want if you're the police. Why they want that, I don't know. I don't know if it's like to create calm in a community or something, but
I think it's that. I think that, you know, the public wants answers to things, and I think quotas, and I think people just want to have a case solved. They're not really interested in actually solving the case.
Actually,
they're just saying, you know, like, it's done. When there's nothing, and there's just no incentive for good police work unless you're good police. And I don't know. It's pretty hard. So The lawsuit also alleged that police gave Veal information that was not available to the public before he made his confession.
Interesting.
Furthermore, the three men who initially gave statements claimed that they were physically abused and verbally threatened during their time being questioned by police. These are 14-year-old kids, 17-year-old kids, which led in part to their completely fabricated confessions.
Right. And that's where that's basically exactly what I was saying. Well, on June 25th, 2014, only 10 years ago, almost to the day of us recording. Let's see, when does this episode come out? Comes out on the 23rd, you guys. So
yeah,
almost 10 years exactly. The state settled, agreeing to pay out $40 million to the five men, an amount that matched the settlement paid out the week prior to the defendants in the Central Park jogger case.
Wow.
So in August of 2016, a year later, Willie Randolph was arrested and charged with the kidnap, sexual assault, and murder of Katarisa. What took that so long? But finally, in November of 2021, are you ready for this? Willie was acquitted and allowed to go free. Now, how if you have a DNA match?
Yeah, that's what unless the evidence, I'm looking it up because like, also, Willie Randolph is a baseball coach. We're not talking about that.
Yeah, we're not talking about him. I just find it odd.
She was
like,
murdered.
What's that?
Especially because she was murdered. Charges him of filing.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Her younger was raped and murdered while on the school bus, you know, and just like, yeah, he was acquitted, but why?
It's hard to say. I mean, 2021, I mean, he's probably in his 70s, I'm assuming, around that time, maybe even a little older. Not that that should matter, but yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, especially because his DNA was linked to it. That's what's so...
It's unsettling, right?
That's what's so unsettling. I'm trying to look this up to see if there's like more that we know of. He was serving already sentences on drug charges, but like... I don't know. It's really bothersome to have these things
kind of go down.
Hopefully he was an old man and he's not going to be able to do much damage anymore. But still, for Katarisa's family, it's like, how do you...
Yeah, for the justice of it all, right?
Exactly.
Well, let us know what you guys thought about this week's episode. You can follow us and mention us on all the social platforms at Jay Thrasher, at Carpe Darren. Hit us up in our Facebook group. And of course, join us on Patreon and we can respond to you directly there. Darren, let's get into some listener shout outs. I know we want to talk about your Father's Day.
Well, I wanted to take this time to thank you all so much for all your Father's Day shout outs. Our friend of the show, Jamie, even celebrates in the Facebook group saying, such a father figure to us all. And it's true. And I really appreciate that, Jamie. I am Father God. I am Father. And I am probably, let's be honest, the best person everyone else knows.
Moving right along. Okay. Kylie, thank you, Darren. Yep. Kylie in our Facebook group said, quote, listening to NMR number 65, and I want to add to the conversation around play. For those of you who don't know, just a side note, I was talking on a recent NMR episode about how adults should just go play more and how it's more of a positive thing. And we're all just wrapped up in our jobs and kids and spouses, but we should have more fun. Anyway, she says, everybody on here needs to read The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. Hands down, the book of the century surrounding the conversations around connections, technology, and the lack of free play. Yes. And Darren, I noticed you had a response. You've actually read this book.
Yeah, I read it a couple weeks ago. Big fan of Jonathan Haidt. I did Happiness Hypothesis. He's done a number of things. I've talked about him. He's a social, like a psychology kind of social economy professor at NYU Stern. And he wrote The Anxious Generation, did all this press tour for it. I read it. It's a remarkable book. He suggests kind of four main things that parents, it really comes at the parents that really need to stick together because, you know, kids come home from school and they're like, well, I want Instagram because John has Instagram. And if parents are really able to stick together in this, then after a few weeks, the kids won't really notice that they don't need to have all this stuff. So no smartphones before high school, no smartphones before high school, no social media before 16. They should have smartphone-free school, so you can still have an Apple Watch or a flip phone or something like that in order to alert anyone for emergencies, but nothing where you can actually post, you know, you can check at the end of the day. And then the fourth, and I think the most important one, which really is coming into terms here with not only schools, but parents and a sense of community, is having more independent free playtime for children. You know, recess is really caught up right now and on the phones and everyone's kind of hidden. They don't even kind of go out and just have phone-free play anymore, playing wall ball, playing tag, you know, playing dress up, shit like that. Kids don't have that. And it's really about independent free time. Also, like being able to, like walk to school, have a sense of responsibility, have a sense of autonomy so they can actually learn a lot of the stuff in the real world. Because one of the main complaints, especially of this book, is that the reason the like these kids are so anxious is because everything from when they become an adult seems so new to them that they don't know how to do anything. They have no confidence in themselves because their parents have bubble wrapped them for so many years. You know, these are people in our generation who have bubble wrapped them for so many years, so scared of safety and stranger danger and all these things that they don't know how to fend for themselves. You know, they don't know how to do laundry. They don't know how to wash a dish. They don't know how to cook a meal. They don't know how to change a tire. They don't even know how to walk to the store by themselves. And honestly, when you don't have that, that is a huge, 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 huge negative. Independence is such an important quality to have in order to build confidence in people. Even nowadays, it's really important.
I agree. And this might appeal to you if you ever have kids. I just saw in the news this week, Southern California students are now banned from using cell phones.
Yes.
In school.
And Florida with Ron DeSantis has also been trying to do that. You know, it really has to come from the parents. You know, you ban something. I mean, let's be honest, right? Like, you don't think there's ever underage drinking in high school just because it's banned? Like, no, people do this. Like, we have to stop pretending that teaching abstinence in schools is going to prevent people from having sex. They're still having sex. So please teach them the appropriate ways to do
of
these
course.
Things.
Yeah.
So they're going to figure it out. But parents really need to be responsible here and stick up to their children and stick up to these things and say, like, no, you can't have that before at least your brain develops a little bit more. And I'm grateful that we did not have these smartphones was growing up in school or in college, for that matter, even Facebook. You know, when you posted stuff on Facebook at that time when I was in college, you posted everything on Facebook. I never thought about the likes I was going to get. I just posted on Facebook for people to see. I never thought about likes.
Right.
And so to have to think your whole world and who's going to watch you and who's going to like this and like that, I just think is pretty upsetting. And I don't think it's really taking into account what really matters. So that is my
That's your father talking.
That's my father. That's the father talking.
That's
and that
Father
is my pitch
God.
To read The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. And obviously, don't forget, you can watch this episode on Patreon several days early and on YouTube. Please smash that subscribe button. We love you all.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. We'll be back later this week, and we love
I'll
you guys.
I'll be in New York City.
Oh, that's right. How long are you in New York, by the way?
Just like 3 days. Very quick.
Oh, great. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, don't forget, take your vitamins.
And, you know, check your pits, but especially if you have your penis, that's like so important. You got to check your pits if you have your penis. That's like mage. Yep.
Okay. All right. See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.